Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the weekend edition of the Real Vision Daily Briefing. Here's Weston Nakamura to break down everything you need to know.
Hi everyone, my name is Weston Nakamura from Real Vision in Tokyo, and I have the honor and privilege of bringing the great Kyla Scanlon to Real Vision YouTube. Welcome, Kyla. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being here. So I've been a follower and a big fan of your work for some time now. And I guess one can even say that I, in a way, attempt to do what you do brilliantly well, except I do it with more horrendous outcomes, but which is basically making, you know, original content, discussing financial markets, economic themes, but, you know, with a twist of amusement or humor, so that it's not just like a bland bowl of Cheerios, or as you would say, put some spiciness onto it. I try to be you and I fail.
Welcome to the Real Vision half day briefing just after market close. I'm Ash Bennington. I'm Weston Nakamura.
Hello, Evergrande.
You owe me money, and you're gonna give me my money.
New management, who this?
This is your f***ing creditor.
Dollar bond or yuan bonds?
Dollar.
It is true that in the last year and a half, oil prices continue to decline. But
these are systematic flows. These are not human traders who are like standing around waiting for the earth to rumble under their feet and then hit the buy button on Bitcoin. Like, no, they get under the kitchen table first and then they buy their earthquake Bitcoin. Anyway, let's just see how this whole thing shakes out.
That's really kind. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's more so how terrible I am. But yes, I am confident you as well. But so if I had to guess, I'd say that there is approximately zero people who would know who I am, but who don't know who you are. That said, what I want to do today is to find out, you know, who Kyla Scanlon is, what your process is, things like that. And then we could also discuss things that are currently happening. But if we don't get to that, I'm sure that we'll see shortly with your work. Mm-hmm. So I guess can you just give us, you know, what your background is, and, you know, how you got into this financial content creation world.
Yeah. So I guess for the full background, and thanks for the nice intro and the self-deprecating humor. I'm a big fan of self-deprecation in terms of humor. But so I started trading options when I was in high school. That's kind of how I got into the finance world. And I actually didn't know that finance was a major. So I was majoring in engineering when I got to university. And then I was like, oh, like, this is something that I can actually study. So I switched into finance. I started a blog when I was in college and wrote for Seeking Alpha and did like different equity analysis. Looking back, it's kind of painful because it's like, oh man, what was I thinking with some of the stuff that I was writing about? But that shows growth, I suppose.
Bottom up fundamental, like equity analysis, like 5-year DCF stuff like that. Cool.
And I love to do like WACC analysis, which just I'm not really sure why I'm so fixated on that. But so I did that all throughout college, and majored in finance, econ, and data analytics. Graduated in 2019, and then moved out to Los Angeles right away to work for a company called Capital Group. Was in the TAP program, now known as the CAP program there, which is an early career rotational program. So I sat on a high yield credit desk. I supported an equity portfolio manager, and I worked on a really big ESG project. Just learned a ton. It was a great experience. But I ended up leaving them in January of 2021 for a job at a company called OnDeck. And at OnDeck, I built out their investment education arm. So had a pretty good sense of sort of like what investment education looked like and just how people were thinking about it. And then I started making TikToks because I left Capitol around the time that GameStop was happening. And there was a bunch of like really crazy information on about finance on TikTok. So I was like, oh, it'd be cool if I helped out here.
Russia's economic collapse is going to impact you. Russia produces a lot of oil. Oil is over $100 a barrel, and oil is more than just cars. It's in everything. Rugs, cabinets, lipstick, glasses, golf ball skis.
Basically, what they want to do is slow everything down. Businesses, stop spending. Stop paying people so much. If you don't pay people as much, they won't spend as much. If they don't spend as much, that means that prices won't go up. Monetary policy.
People started using our horrible, detrimental platform and used things like this.
Because you broke our snap streak.
I'm Tim Apple. I control all ads everywhere by proxy. All I wanted was to destroy the world.
Of the world. This is under discussion.
$50 billion lost on my birthday.
right, like, why not? So I started making TikToks and did like these little market updates, and they did well, and started doing more like skit style things, and have always kind of had a newsletter. I've been writing for since college, right? And then in September, I took the full-time leap because it was kind of an opportunity that I wanted to explore more and have the incredible luck, I guess, to kind of explore it and really wanted to. So I've been doing this full-time since September and learn more every single day. So yeah, that's kind of the path. It was never intentional. It just sort of happened, which is, I think, really cool. Yeah.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack there. what a journey. And you know, you're still incredibly young, so that's quite a resume. So I guess first let me just ask you just really quick, would you say that GME has contributed to your rise? For if not that, and the, you know, opportunity you saw to tell people, hey, you know, securities can also go down sometimes too, right? Like, you know, if
yeah. no, I, like maybe a little bit. I think a lot of people started paying attention to the markets when GameStop AMC happened. And so I think like that was probably beneficial, but I wasn't really on the platform when it was happening. So I don't think I got the same boost that like maybe other creators did, but I still think, of course, like, you know, the retail investor boom that we've had has obviously helped all content creators in the finance space everywhere. But yeah, so I think that helped. And then, yeah, the main goal with me is to really just help people kind of understand everything that's going on. So I don't really focus on like single stock stuff. I focus a lot on the economy, focus a little bit on crypto too. So the whole goal is just to like tie a bunch of threads. And I have like my newsletter, my YouTube, my TikTok. I'm on Instagram with like Reels and then the YouTube Shorts. So I try to meet people. I have a podcast version of the YouTube. So I try to meet people where they need to be met in terms of like content distribution as well as production. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You're everywhere. I was gonna ask you. So, like, what's your main? If do you even have a main sort of platform or not really? I mean, you have your Substack, you have your, you know, you have your YouTube videos. You know, I mean, I guess you're known for your TikToks. What would you consider to be your main avenue, I suppose?
I'm not sure. I guess in terms of frequency, it's definitely TikTok and Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts, because I post on that almost every single day, just like a market update. In terms of, Yeah, and I would say like I probably have the biggest following because of that. So if you're measuring just in terms of audience count, I'd say that's a big one. The newsletter is doing really well, which is really exciting because I really love to write. YouTube is always a work in progress. So yeah, I'd say the TikTok is probably like the most Kyla that people know of. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's actually kind of weird because it's like so your newsletter. Personally, I like your newsletter the most.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, but that's, you know, it's hard to pick, but it's so funny because your newsletter is, you know, obviously like humor and stuff doesn't come across. Not that it's supposed to necessarily be funny per se, but it is comparatively much more serious. Like if I just kind of read your newsletter, never knew anything else about anything else that you did, and then I saw one of your TikToks, I'd be like, okay, it's definitely not the same person. So I guess, yeah, you kind of got into this, but like a little bit more, like, what's your motivation? Like, you know, you put in clearly a ton of time and effort into this. And so what drives you? You know, I'm guessing it's some form of educating the prospective or current investor of any level, really. Not necessarily investors, just people who are just interested in what's going on in the world. But what drives you, really, I guess?
Yeah, so I think it's like two things, right? So like there's the intrinsic and the extrinsic motivation. So intrinsically, like this is just such an important opportunity and like such an incredible opportunity for me to have and for people to like to want to listen to my work and want to engage with my work. And so like it just every day I get to wake up and like do this. And so I think that's like a really big thing for me is like wanting to do a good job. And it is a big time commitment, but especially mostly because the markets are just crazy. But so that's like part of it. And then extrinsically, so I'm from Kentucky and like money was always like a big question mark. Like how does it work? And I definitely understand that other people in other places have that same thing. And that's part of the thing is that everywhere people are like, what is money, right? Like, what does that actually mean? And so my goal is just to help people, you know, understand how the economy works. Like, what does it really mean when gas prices go up? What really is supply and demand? What does the Fed actually do? Because the Fed is like such a huge driver mm-hmm. of a lot of the things that happen. And I feel like a lot of people are like, you know, so that's the main goal. It's just to help people understand the broad scope of existence in terms of financial metrics. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, I guess this is going back to what you were saying about how you were trading options without knowing that finance was a degree. which is a reflection of this just utter lack of, you know, just basic kind of personal finance education in curriculum. Like you would think that that's something that you would learn in high school, right? Just mm-hmm. basic finance, or even something like if you don't pay your taxes, you're gonna go to jail. So maybe you should learn that. Like, you know, maybe you should teach that, right? So, yeah, I totally agree with you that there's a complete lack of, not just a lack of information or education out there, but there is a lot of terrible information out there as well. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, you certainly do, you know, put in a dent in like neutralizing a lot of that. So I think that's really wonderful. So you are looking at an infinite amount of things, anything that the world throws at you, you know, I mean, I guess I'm sort of the same way too, but mm-hmm. you're basically ready for it. And, you know, one of the things I really admire about you is that you really do your homework. Like you don't put out anything unless you could tell, like, unless you've done like the due diligence and you know what you're talking about, you don't put anything out there. Which I'm assuming is a conscious thing that you're doing, requirement. But with that said, you cover so many different topics. So I guess, like, can you like tell me what your process is like? What's your, either from your day to day or maybe like a broader like process? Like if you have a theme in mind, you keep it in the back of your head, you revisit things, you know, like how do you keep your eyes on so many different things at once? And how do you distill all that information? And, you know,
Yeah. So I usually wake up, check pre-market data. That's kind of the first thing. Wake up pretty early just so I can kind of get a head start on all that stuff. And then I sort of just start like compiling information. I have different tabs and I use a Notion document. So everything can kind of stay live. And I just sort of toss stuff in there, whether it's about like agriculture or oil or like credit markets. I just try to keep everything aggregated and write out little notes to myself there. And usually I can tell if there's like a big theme, like today on March 8th, Tuesday, the big theme is nickel. So I tend to pay a little bit more attention to the big themes that are happening and sort of try to like parcel out what's going on there. And then sort of like towards, and then I have quite a few meetings throughout the day. And then I try to, at the end of the day, just sort of aggregate all my thoughts and like, why did this happen? What does that mean relative to that? So I write myself like a little diary note. And then I turn it into a TikTok, which is kind of a good way to keep track of everything. So that's kind of like the day to day. And then at the end of the week, I compile all the notes into a Substack article, film that, turn that into a YouTube, and just kind of roll from there. So it's a lot of reading. It's a lot of like reading different Substacks. Like there's so many good indie writers out there, I guess. Like Rory Johnson is a great oil analyst. Joey, I don't know how to say his last name, but Joey does a lot of really good work around like labor statistics. So I just try to find those people who are experts in all this stuff. And I just synthesize what they're writing about and try to like connect the dots, which you do too. So yeah.
I'm really glad you got to that last phrase, that connect the dots thing. That's what I really have so much respect for you for, and what I really admire about you, because this is what I try to do all the time, is dot connecting. A lot of times, like, you know, financial media or even market participants will just say like ABC is happening and XYZ is happening. And then they don't really make a connection, even if there's a connection, or they don't really even think to make a connection or attempt to make a connection. And that there are profound connections, and that those connections and tying things together, or at least the attempt to do so, is critical value. And I know that's something that you are always conscious trying to do. It's really difficult to do too, right? But like, how do you go about connecting dots?
Yeah, I mean, so like most of the time, it's just seeing what's happening on a day-to-day basis and being like, oh, like, you know, what's going on with nickel is probably going to create a little bit of contagion across commodities. And like, what does that mean for like ECB policy that's happening this week and Fed policy? So right now it's kind of a little bit simpler to connect all the dots because there is sort of one big domino, and that's Russian sanctions. But also previously to that, it was pandemic stimulus and then the after effect of that too. So the main goal is just to sort of like see how everything interconnects and like, agriculture leads to inflation and like all those things. And I think that's the biggest thing. It's just like, how do the dominoes tip, and just trying to point that out. Yeah.
Please keep doing that. I think you do a phenomenal job. And, you know, I read some of your stuff and it triggers things in my head too. So I really value that about you. All right. So let's talk about like some of the crazy things that are happening. Because there are some crazy things that are happening.
Yeah.
So you touched on commodities. Commodities are, I think that they're going up a lot recently. So let's see.
Say that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's one way to see it.
Yeah, I think, well, directionally, I think I'm correct on that. Okay, so on the month, we're looking at crude at 45%. This is a one month. 45% up. UK net gas and European net gas is up 200%. That's just for energy, you know, I suppose. But then today, or last 2 days really, we have LME nickel futures that were up 90% and 111% day to day, and then they paused trading. You had a great term, meme commodities. Can you explain to me what a meme commodity is? I think I just did, but can you explain to me what a meme commodity is?
I didn't coin that phrase, to be clear. There's been a lot of like, what the heck is this chart doing kind of vibes on Twitter. But I mean, it's just these things are trading like you would have seen GameStop trading a couple, like a year ago, I guess. So it's just like you see these huge like wheat palladium, like everything is just like spiking in price, which you would normally expect from a meme stonk or a meme coin. But these are commodities, so it's way different, right? So that's kind of what's going on there, is you're just seeing huge price spikes and things that like hopefully would never be doing this, but they definitely are. So yeah.
Yeah, it's the thing is that like it is pretty scary though, because you know, I actually put out like a tweet about this, but so first of all, this is like let's take nickel for example, because nickel is like it in LME history, this is like insane. So fundamentally, it has nothing to do with it. Like nickel is like if it's Russia driven or whatever, Russia is something like 5% of nickel global nickel supply and all. It doesn't warrant a 250% 2-day rise. But what you're getting though are things like these margin calls. We're talking 20 something commodities that are in backwardation simultaneously. Like there are going to be some serious margin call sort of implications. And what if that happens? Institutional investors and whoever across the board, and not just investors, but like commercial producers and all that too. Like, do you see a potential risk there?
Oh yeah, I mean it's super concerning, right? An LME suspended trading, but like it's kind of like the Moscow Exchange suspending trading. Like you can only do it for so long, and it doesn't really remove the risk entirely. So I think yeah, it's just worrying what the commodities are doing, and like what that would mean for the firms that are involved with that, and just how it means for prices in general. So yeah, I agree with you.
At what point do you look at a price of something, be it European net gas or gold up 3% today, or nickel up 250% in 2 days? Like, where do you kind of draw the line between like, okay, this is now getting into non-fundamental craziness territory?
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit difficult, right? Like, I think a lot of this is just a function of fear. So like, what do these sanctions actually mean? And like, are we going to be able to fix it? So like, today the US announced that they were going to completely stop importing Russian oil and gas, right? So that's gonna, and the market already priced that in to a certain extent, but that's gonna freak the market out even more, because it's like, what does that mean? Like, how are we going to work this out? Like, will we go to Iran, Venezuela? So I think that a lot of this stuff is just the market not super knowing what's going to happen. And with wheat, right? Like Russia and Ukraine are 25% of global shipment. Mm-hmm. So where's that going to come from? So I think a lot of that is just like, to your point about fundamentals, I'm not sure, I can't like parcel out exactly what is what, but I think a lot of it is just fear, uncertainty, volatility that's moving this stuff too. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, and also probably maybe like also a lack of anything else to be long, because the lack of options really, and the fact that nobody was overweight like the energy sector still by any means, right? So I definitely have to keep an eye on like, so currently, let's say, so LME copper, not copper, probably copper at some point too, but LME commodities are going crazy and all that. Going forward now, right? Like, so this now, what does Kylie Scanlon do with this, given this situation? How do you go about keeping an eye on it? Going back to your process, like using this as an example, I guess, where would you take it from here?
So like right now I'm just trying to calibrate, like me personally, just trying to calibrate around what's going on, like why is this happening, sort of what's the end game here, like what can be the potential off ramps for each of these commodities, like what's the solution, and will that sort of placate the market, or are we going to see like even worse problems begin to happen? So like with oil, after the US announcement today, it's going to be paying close attention to Iran and Venezuela and those talks, and OPEC too, and seeing what they're going to say about all this, because like incentives are a little misaligned across the board there. And then wheat, I think that I'm really a little nervous about that one, and sort of like food insecurity in general, because Egypt imports most of the wheat from Russia and Ukraine, and last time that there was a shortage of wheat, we had things get really tense politically everywhere. So I think that's going to be important to pay attention to. And then just like what's going on with nickel, like nickel's kind of separate because that was a short squeeze. But I think that you could see more things like that begin to happen, where all these people have short positions, and then something crazy happens with the price, and there's a squeeze. So I think that's going to be important to pay attention to, is like who's positioned where, why, and how, and try to gather as much information on that as I can. Yeah.
Yeah, that's always something that's really scary too. Like, because somebody, there are many people that have blown up from this move alone. But that if it happens to be like, you know, some massive hedge fund, they're gonna have to unwind other positions that have nothing to do with it, and that's going to have this ripple effect. And that's, you know, we've seen that with, like Archegos and positions like that. You know. Those single stock positions have nothing to do with each other fundamentally, but they all, you know, drop 40% in an afternoon or whatever it was, because of this like mass like unwind and all that. I guess that's what scares me, is like I personally don't own any nickel, or I'm not short any nickel or anything like that. There are, you know, and I have my set of securities that I care about. And so those things I don't care about, these I do, so why should I care about that? Well, you should care about those other things because there are people that cross-hold things that you care about and that thing that's blowing up over there. And so you're going to have, you know, a domino effect, as you were saying, too. So that's really what I kind of keep an eye on. And it's so non-transparent, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you find, like, do you find data and stuff like that? Do you just use kind of publicly available data for the most part?
I mostly publicly available data, and then people on Twitter just like work in the industry, so they'll just say stuff, and you got to be careful because sometimes they're just saying stuff, but usually if you can like sort of fact check them against other tweets that they have, that can be pretty valuable. So just following like experts in each of these spaces, like there's a couple nickel traders that were talking about this I think a few weeks ago. So yeah, that's kind of what I pay attention to too. And they'll kind of talk about like who's holding what, who's in trouble. So.
Right, right. Yes, you're very, very resourceful.
Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah. No, but I mean that. I mean that. Of course, we all have to be, and we are to a certain extent. But you are very gifted in that area. I want to make a point of that. So, I think it's awesome. I think that's what you also do. Like that value that you bring is that. Not everyone can do what you do, because it's not just about doing your homework and, you know, putting out like a video. It's like you are really good at this, like information distilling and like proactively digging up resources and then distilling it all together, right? So I don't know personally how you do it, even though it's kind of my job to do it myself. I think it's great, but it's also kind of encouraging because people think that people like Kyle or whoever, like if you have that level of knowledge about something, it's because they're probably paying a lot of money for some alt data or whatever it is. And it's really not the case. Like I use most of my stuff, I use is like public data. So it's encouraging that like, yes, you can actually know a lot just from publicly available information.
Yeah. Like I don't have access to a terminal. I don't even have access to CapIQ or anything like that, which kind of sucks, but it makes you kind of work a little bit harder to find everything. Fred is super great.
Yeah.
For data too. And then, yeah, like people will post charts of stuff and I'm like, oh yes, here's a chart for me. Twitter is definitely super valuable. And then like the more that you kind of ask questions, I found, so like if you DM people and you're like, oh, you posted this, like, what does that actually mean? Like, do you mind to explain a little bit more? They'll kind of follow up and be like, hey, you should check this out. So it's also about just like talking to people, which is super helpful. Yeah.
Absolutely. Indeed. Okay, so I just want to get your view on central banks, specifically the ECB and the Fed. It was not that long ago that everyone was dead certain about, well, it was either 50 basis points or 25 basis points in March, but one of those. Then when Ukraine really happened, and then you had Chairman Powell in front of the, I think it was the Senate committee, mm-hmm. or the House committee, like basically saying like, okay, in March, at the March FOMC, we are going to raise 25 basis points, like very clearly and all that. Like, do you think that this Ukrainian crisis or like the markets, I guess, expectations of the Fed have changed, and therefore it may have changed what the Fed and the ECB are respectively doing? And are they kind of no longer on the same general path of, we are a little bit behind the curve and we need to start to tighten up policy? Because one of them is kind of geographically, you know, in the thick of it, whereas the other one's not.
Yeah, no, I think I think most people are in agreement that the ECB is not going to be able to do much in terms of tightening, just because their main goal is going to be providing support so Europe doesn't essentially implode financially. So I think that's kind of the big one with Europe and the Fed, branching off. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but it'll just be interesting in terms of flows and what that means. But from the Fed perspective, I was so surprised. He made it so clear, which is just so rare to hear, somebody from the Fed actually say very clearly, like a metric. Bullard is out there yelling about 100 basis points by July, but to hear Powell say that, is pretty surprising. I just think
it's like an FOMC meeting almost. It was almost like a press conference, right? It's crazy.
No, I think that's a pretty good point. And at the time, he didn't seem super worried about, contagion from Russia. I'm not sure if his views have changed since all these sanctions have rolled out, because I think a lot has happened sanction wise since he spoke. But it'll just be interesting, because they're going to have to balance, people are starting to throw around the stagflation word again. So he's going to, they're going to have to be a little bit careful around that. But I think they're also in between, every central bank right now is in between a rock and a hard place, where it's like, okay, I do have my dual mandate of, price stability and maximum employment, but also geopolitical risk makes all of that so uncertain and so hard. I think their main goal is probably just going to be price stability, right? Like, how do we just make sure that things are okay, that funding markets aren't freaking out, that, Yeah, so because the USD is a little bit of a safe haven at the moment too. So it's just there's so many different things that I do not envy their position. There's a lot that they have to think about. Yeah.
No, yeah. Regardless of Ukraine and Russia, I wouldn't envy their position either.
Sure.
But it is, it's a super interesting time, especially like what you're saying about the dollar too. It's probably dollar bullish, but then it's kind of longer term big picture. Is this a de-dollarization of everything? Is this is the dollar so what do you think of that aspect of it? That's probably beyond Powell's term and all that too, but
I think during that same testimony he was there can be two reserve currencies in the world, so but I think it's interesting, right? There's been a lot of really good discourse around that. Zoltan has come out and essentially he wrote a note the other day where it was kind of scary, where it was talking about the Chinese currency and that could be the reserve currency too, and all this stuff is going to make people, all the sanctions are going to make people not want to be based on the dollar. Iran asked Europe to do the gas payments, right, or the oil payments in euros instead of dollars. So I think that we're going to see people begin to sort of switch away from the dollar, because now the dollar is a weapon. And I think China is paying very close attention to that. But, is the Chinese currency the best reserve currency? I'm not sure. I think the dollar at the end of the day, for now, the U.S. government is still the most stable government, is still the biggest, still has the most military oomph, which really is kind of, if you think about it, the reason the dollar is reserve currency. So I'm not sure what will end up happening. I don't see a world where it kind of, I don't see another alternative, but who knows,
Well, there is one potential one called crypto, which I know that you are very...
As reserve currency?
No, not as reserve
currency. Oh, I was like, what?
as reserve currency, just based on right now, I would put the yuan closer to crypto than close to the dollar in terms of reserve currency status, global reserve currency status. But we'll see. Who knows what could happen? Anything could happen, right? I think Jerome Powell was talking about when he was saying the two reserve currencies possible. I think the other one he was talking about was in context of the yuan, right? So, yeah. But if I could just pick your mind for a second about crypto, crypto's kind of is it crypto's time to shine right now in light of Ukraine and all that? It's in a different light right now. What do you make of that?
A disclaimer, I'm a fan of crypto. I own crypto. I really like it. But I'm a little surprised on how it's acted. This is kind of like to your point, this is its time to shine. And I just haven't seen it shining the way that I thought. I think it's a little bit tough because of sanctions and everything. But and like you did see the Russian people sort of going into Bitcoin, like you saw upticks and flows there. You saw Ukrainian people sort of go into Bitcoin too. And then a really cool thing about everything has been the crypto donations to Ukraine. Like it helped buy $15 million USD of weapons, right? Which is really useful for them right now. But like when a geopolitical crisis happens, I would have expected to see crypto trade upwards, but I think it's kind of hard because of the broader risk off movement in the market. And unfortunately, there's so much institutional money in crypto right now that it trades like the NASDAQ. And so that's just how you've seen it moving. And I think that's how a lot of big institutions see it, is not as like this, you know, I guess libertarian ideology of anti-government, but rather just another way to get exposure to tech. So this is something I've been like thinking a lot about, and I still don't quite know how I feel about it, but that's just been surprising. It's like, it's become a tech tool versus like anti-censorship, anti-government, et cetera. Yeah. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree that it's because the fact that it's, you know, you're pulling forward so much of the future, of course it's going to be a risk asset in terms of price action behavior. In theory, though, and this is what I'm really split on, is like, okay, so it's great that you're able to fund Ukrainians with via crypto. At the same time, if sanctioned oligarchs or whoever they may be from Russia are using that very same method to evade sanctions, that's where crypto is like, you know, its advantages are the reasons for a regulatory clampdown, or like it could be seen as both like a positive and negative for the same reason. And so I don't know where the forces combined collectively will, you know, how that battle will be. I just know that it's in this current light as like, okay, here's the functional purpose it's serving. Mm-hmm. How is that going to net play out, you know? And I'm totally split on that. Longer term, you know, I would believe in it, except I fear the regulatory overreach potential. So
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's like the biggest worry with all crypto is regulatory. And Biden has been working on this executive order for a while, and it kind of came out this week. Which I don't know if it was ever official, if it's been officially published yet, but yeah, like in the EU is like, we hate crypto. So it's just going to be tough, I think. Yeah.
What do you think? Why do you think Mr. Gensler is dragging his feet? He knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he knows the subject, right? Like, is he just like, I don't want to deal with it, do you think? Or is he thinking really hard about it?
I mean, he knows a lot about it, to your point. Like, he taught that MIT class on Bitcoin. Yeah, so I think for him, like, and Powell addressed this in his testimony too, I think it's just like, it's this big uncertain thing and they don't really like how it's utilized, I think. And it's largely unregulated. So I think for them, like, they're just like, the SEC's plan right now, like they did with BlockFi, is just to sue companies and sort of like learn about the process that way and have the companies do the work for them. So I think that's kind of his thing, is like, there's still so much to learn, and it's a lot easier to sue companies and learn versus like, you know, going in deep. So that is why I think it's taking so long, because that's the process. Yeah.
It's very matter of fact and frank. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, so anyway, so we gotta wrap up here, Kyla, but I don't know if you have any like sort of last final words, last thoughts for given these crazy times, or not. You can save them for your for your content.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's definitely, it's sort of crazy time to be around. Like, I was thinking about it this morning. So I started work 6 months before COVID happened. Like, that was my adulthood. So I've like never lived through a normal market, I think. And so I like, in terms of being an adult in the finance world, and I think a lot of newer investors are in that same boat, and it can get really overwhelming, but I also believe in reversion to the mean. So I think things will normalize hopefully over time. And yeah, so that's kind of my last words is reversion to the mean is a powerful tool.
Well, let me ask you, what is your definition of normal though?
Right.
I'm not trying to be like philosophical or anything. Like I really want to know, like, what do you consider to be a normal market? You know, reverting to? What's the mean that we're reverting to, I suppose?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, arguably in 2018, that wasn't really, it hasn't been normal since 2008, and then it really wasn't normal before that. So I think just, like, maybe less world events happening, that would be cool. That would be a little more normal. Yeah.
Understood. Well, you mentioned before, but like where could, if someone wants to find you, would
yeah
you...
yeah so it's yeah. It's pretty simple because my name is my name is only, I think there's only like 3 Kyla Scanlons in the world, so just Google Kyla Scanlon and
there are 2 others.
I'm trying to buy one of them. They have the Instagram handle Kyla, which I really want. So yeah, but just Kyla Scan across everything, on YouTube, newsletters, kyla.substack.com, and yeah, always happy to answer questions too, and Twitter DMs. So
thank you, Kyla, for not just your time today, but like thank you seriously for all that you do. If not on behalf of the audience, certainly on behalf of myself. I've used you as a resource before, like I was saying when I was doing my Evergrande video. And nobody was talking really about LGFVs, and I checked to see if this is something worthy of mentioning, and then you would mention it. I was like, okay, good. So this is not just like, and so I truly do value what you do. Please keep it up, because at least I depend on it. So, but thank you very much for everything that you do.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.